Yeah. So the IRS at one point did try to push back on that. There's a case in California. I think it's like a Garwal. They went to the dictionary and looked up the term broker, and it's basically said bringing together a buyer and a seller. That was one of the definitions. And the court found that, you know, real estate agent does exactly that. So their services.
Welcome to the Real Estate Professional Status Podcast. Join me as I sit down with a tax expert and real estate investors to learn how you can qualify for the real estate professional status and how you can use it to amplify your real estate investments. My name is Usher Fried. Let's get right to it. Welcome on to the show, Ryan Pulis. Thank you for making the time coming on. How are you doing?
Thank you for having me. I'm doing very well. Thank you for asking. Hopefully you are as well. And I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
Could you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, so I run a tax and accounting firm. We're based in Virginia, but we work with people all over the United States. We specialize in tax planning and advisory services for real estate investors and small business owners.
Nice. So real estate investors and small business owners, is a small business general? The real estate is a little bit more specific. Is there anyone in small business that you help?
Yeah, most of our small business is either real estate adjacent, like construction or appraisal companies. And then on the other side of that, we have a lot of professional service firms. Like in our area, we're pretty close to DC, so we have a lot of professional services in the area and government contractors as well. So sort of split between the two. My area is real estate.
Right. Oh, so that's what you focus on.
Yeah, I focus on the real estate.
Construction, like you said, does overlap
Yeah,
with
exactly.
real estate because it is. And not only that, I would love to get some clarity on this from you. Construction is one of the 11 activities that do count.
Yep, the real property trades are businesses, construction, and they throw
Construction and
reconstruction in there,
reconstruction.
and
First of all,
development,
that's my
redevelopment.
pet peeve. What is that? Construction and reconstruction.
They're just differentiating, I think, between the different types, like tear down, rebuild versus just. It drives me crazy too, as well.
I feel like they want oh, there's 11
Yeah,
different options,
yeah,
It's like, yeah, no, there's like
yeah,
six
exactly. Yeah, when
actually,
you,
because half of them are just repeats.
yeah,
Developing, redeveloping, construction,
yeah,
reconstruction,
exactly.
cycling, recycling. No, recycling does not count as your hours. It's good for the
Not one of the
planet, but it's
11.
not going to help you get real estate professional status. So those that are in construction, the business owners, right? So they could count any of their hours in construction as part of their 750 hours.
Yeah, as long as they own 5% of the business, then they are, their time can count towards real estate professional status. Then they need, if they own rental properties, they need to show that they materially participated in the rental activities after qualifying buying as a real estate professional.
Right.
So as you know, the real estate professional, the two hurdles, you need more than 50% of your time in real property trades or businesses, and the 750 hours in real property trades or businesses. You have to materially participate in the real property trades or businesses that you're involved in.
Right. So I, just a side point, I think people get like tripped up with the material participation because some of it overlaps, some of it doesn't. I think what nobody realizes, any time you invest in any business, for that income to be considered as active, non-passive income, you got to materially participate, and it's not even related to real estate.
Yeah, exactly. You're exactly right. The passive and non-passive activities apply to everything. So if you're not materially participating in a business, it's passive. Just with real estate, rental real estate in particular, it's per se passive. So by default, it's passive, whether you materially participate or not. There's a couple exceptions to that. A big one that we're talking about is real estate, qualifying as a real estate professional,
Right.
which sort of takes you out of the default passive bucket and puts you over here with all the other businesses.
Right. So it's just basically taking real estate and putting it with all other businesses. And then, of course, it's just like any other business.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So I think that people like, whatever. I feel that there's some vagueness over there or lack of clarity, but.
Yeah, there is. I mean, it's a very nuanced section of the code, and there's a lot of bad information out there as well, which doesn't help things at all.
Right. I mean, especially those short social media clips about how the rich protect their money.
Yeah. Yeah, TikTok tax tips. That's those things drive me crazy.
Why go to accounting school if you could just watch a 30-second short? You know?
Exactly.
So getting back to construction, right? Let's say we got a guy who works in construction, owns a percentage of the business, whatnot. Do you find that people in construction could overlap those hours into material participation? Is there a way to, you know, because let's say you build a house and then you rent that house out. So those hours that you spent building the house, I would assume count as material participation because it's integral to the rent. Am I right on that?
When you build your own rental?
When I build, let's say I'm a developer and I'm going to have a house built and I'm going to rent it out. I'm going to have a huge multifamily project and we rent it out. So do those hours of spending on building it up count towards the material participation? I would think,
As long as if your intent was to build this rental and rent it out and keep it as an income producing property, and it wasn't first classified over here as to be built for resale, then you have an argument to say that's material participation.
Right. But if you're just in construction and you're not going to rent out those properties yourself, you're going to sell them. There's no way to use those hours into material participation.
It would be more difficult because once you kind of establish it as a rental, that is a separate activity from your construction. You might be able to make the argument, depending on your involvement during and afterwards, then if you have someone else managing the property, that kind of blurs the lines a little bit.
So anyone in construction, they would have to legitimately participate in their rentals. There is no way to like do a grouping election, you know, own other rentals out of state, do construction, build something up, and then do a grouping election and then loop in other properties.
Once it's a rental, you can make the what's called the 9G election. It's from the regulations, the 469-9G, where you can group all of your rentals and treat them as one for material participation purposes. So then if you have, you know, let's just say you have 10 rental properties that you're grouping together and you're able to hit the 500-hour material participation test because you've got 50 hours in each property, then you have the grouping election and that's going to work. But that 9 election only applies if you qualify as a real estate professional.
Right.
If you qualify as a real estate professional first, then you make the election to group.
Got it. So people in construction generally are materially participating just like a broker, I would say, right? So a broker is someone who all of their hours count towards the 750 hours, but it doesn't help them at all in regards to material participation.
So all of your real estate professional hours to count have to be material participation.
Right.
So,
but in the rentals.
But then if your rental property itself, you need to show material participation in that property or a group of properties together in addition after you qualify.
Right. So meaning you always have to materially participate. The 750 hours is 750 hours of material participation. But those material participation hours might count towards the 750 hours, but not count towards the, I don't know what else to call it besides material participation hours.
Exactly. So if you're a real estate agent and you've got your 750 hours selling real estate, selling properties, now you also own your own rental properties. Those 750 hours that you work as a real estate agent, their material participation hours, as you being a real estate agent, count towards the 750. They don't count towards material participation in your rental property. That's why your example of like the construction company that builds the property, in that case, you, depending on your intent, you could count them because, you know, when did the activity of being a rental start? And it's probably the time they decided, let's start building this property to rent it out. So when you convert it to that use, now your participation hours start from that period. But most people aren't building their own rentals. So a real estate agent,
right?
Typically, once they close on the property they buy at the rental property, that now they have to start demonstrating material participation in that rental in addition to what they've done for their real estate agent activity.
Right.
Salesperson.
Got it. Wow. So I didn't even realize how confusing it is because everything is material participation, but then there's specific material participation that is not 750 hours, but doesn't have really another name on top of it to differentiate from the 750 hours, right? The seven tests of material participation.
Yeah.
Okay, so now if someone's in construction, so generally speaking, they're going to get it, the 750 hours, no problem. They have rentals, so they would have to go ahead and show that they did work in those rentals specifically. They could either have their company do work in it because they own, right?
Yeah.
They don't have to physically be, with their hands, getting on their hands and knees. If they own a property management company, so the owner of that property management company, all of those hours of his workers probably count as his own material participation hours.
Yeah.
Okay. I actually did not know that. I wasn't sure if you own the company, meaning your workers' hours, your company's hours could count, and like meaning you don't have to be, like he could be sleeping, but if his company is doing the work,
the material participation hours for the business owner, they have to be his hours. So yeah. His time is what is key here. But if you want to group your different real property trades and businesses together, like if you're managing your rentals and you have a construction company, you can group those activities together to achieve to hit the 750 hours. Like let's say your construction company, you spend 500 hours a year in that, and then you spend another 500 managing your rental portfolio, because those are both real property trades and businesses. You can combine those.
Yeah.
There's a court case. He grouped his time in multiple real property trades or businesses to qualify as a real estate professional. And he had the hours of material participation in his rentals, was able, he won his court case. And shortly after, they put out a chief counsel advice, is in 2015, where the IRS came out and said, yes, you can group these various real property trades or businesses to qualify as a real estate professional. And once you qualify for a real estate professional, then you make the election to group your rental properties together. And I kind of explained the order of how that worked.
Right. Got it. I just want to dial it back. I wanted to discuss like hours that count and hours that don't count and, zoom in on this a little bit. Tell us from your experience what you see clients making mistakes on, what people can't. So I have a list of, different hours. Let's start with traveling.
Yep.
Traveling to and from rentals. What's the deal with that? Sometimes it counts, sometimes it doesn't count.
Yeah, so that's one where it comes down to a court case and being in the right jurisdiction to get it to qualify. So typically the general rule is travel hours don't count. Now there's a court case out there, I think it was Lee, L-E-Y-H, where they allowed travel time to count towards real estate professional hours. They had something like 690 hours, let's say. I don't know if that's the correct amount. It was in the upper 600s, time spent in the operations. And then they had, another 100 hours. It was time going between, I think they had 10 or 12 properties or so. So time spent traveling between the various rental properties to take care of business related tasks. The court allowed it and let them qualify as a real estate professional. Generally, that's not the case when you're simply, especially if you're leaving your home, going to a property and coming back, they're going to look at that as a commute and say it's not going to qualify. This court case happens to be the exception. And in the IRS audit guide, they have for passive activities, there's an audit techniques guide out there. In there, it says travel times not count towards material participation, which to be real estate professional hours need to be materially participating hours. So generally, it's not allowed. There's one court case if you want to roll the dice and try to mirror what they did. But my recommendation to my clients, which I tell them, go ahead and log your travel time, but make sure you hit the hours you need without it. And then you keep that in there as that's going to help you track how much time you're actually spending.
And I think it's a buffer.
Yeah, exactly. And it looks way more reasonable if you have all your hours without the travel and you still track that in. I think it helps solidify your case because, an IRS agent, when they come in to audit, they're going to look for what hours they can throw out. So you want to hit it anyway, because you don't want to go to court, try to win on travel time. You want to win without it, because going to court, it's going to get very expensive.
Right. Yeah. I'm assuming that a lot of people who have to go to court just don't fight because it does cost a lot of money to fight in court. I mean, I guess it depends how much money they stand to lose.
Yeah. And most people try to settle before. It's not somewhere you want to play around with. You want to make sure you actually qualify. Don't try to game it, because if you get caught, it's not going to turn out well for you.
I one time made a comment on a Facebook post basically saying that there was an unclear rule. So I said, we just have to hope that somebody that does this gets audited. we can find out. And someone's like, are you serious? Like, he starts attacking me, like, you really want someone to get audited? I'm like, dude, I told him, like, I wrote LOL in the comment. He's like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see the LOL. Like, just relax. Like, even if I didn't write LOL, it's just like, you know, I'm on Facebook, man. Just let me be.
Yeah, calm down, buddy.
So travel time, you're basically saying it doesn't count. Once you go to the property, let's say you're traveling to Home Depot or to pick up stuff coming back, so I guess you just don't have to write down so much detail, put in 5 nails. You could just say I spent an hour and a half working on the property, and then you could include your Home Depot trips and whatnot.
Yeah, stuff like that. So the rule of thumb is, if what you're doing impacts the day-to-day operations of the property, then that's material participation. If it doesn't, like if you buy a property in another state and you're going to drive by and check in with the property management company to see how it's doing, that travel has nothing to do with how the property's running. It would perform exactly the same whether you showed up or not. But like you said, if you're there turning over a tenant, changing the carpets or doing repairs, and you have to take a 10-minute trip to Home Depot to grab some materials and come back and finish your work, that I would view as that's impacting the operations. Go ahead and count your time. How long were you there working on the property for the day?
But what about a 2-hour trip to Home Depot? five hours of work. What were you doing for 5 hours? Well, the Home Depot was 2 hours away. So I got to the property, I saw what I needed, drove 2 hours, drove back. What's the matter? It's like, isn't there a closer Home Depot? Yeah, but I got it for cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so what would happen? An IRS agent, they're going to look at the time spent and just, is it reasonable or not? And,
right.
A short trip for something that you're performing work, like in your example.
So
I don't think they're going to have, you'd have to have a really terrible auditor for them to have an issue with that.
Right. So short trips could just get lumped in and that should be fine. But long trips.
Yeah, that's part of you handling the repairs and maintenance. I wouldn't even call that travel time, because it's just, we need supplies.
Right. But if once you get past a certain amount, we're operating
a business here.
But you got to drive to the closest store. You can't, drive across state to pick up Scotch tape.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's traveling time. We knocked that out. Okay, so now with researching properties, again, I think some will count, some won't count. You know, if you go into the building, I guess give us an overview of research.
The research and education hours, again, generally don't count. If you're building up a portfolio and you've got a few houses in one neighborhood, and you spend some time looking to buy another property in the same neighborhood, and it's not a significant part of your hours, is that going to get thrown out? No, probably not. They're going to allow that because you're in the business in this area, you're buying a new property, you add it to your portfolio, especially if you eventually close on the property, and it's not a significant portion of your hours, you're not going to have an issue. But when 500 hours of your 750 is spent researching properties and you own 2 rentals, that's not going to fly. So there's several court cases out there on this as well. When the bulk of your time is spent researching properties or going to real estate seminars, it's not impacting the operations. So it's one of those things that's similar to travel. A little bit here and there is probably not going to hurt you, but hey, you never want to rely on it to qualify. If it's a significant portion of your hours, you're not going to qualify.
Meaning to say that it doesn't necessarily not count at all, but if it's dominating your hours, like everything is taken into context. If it makes sense, if you want some sauce on your pizza, some cheese, some crust, you can't overload cheese, and say it's all for the pizza. I don't know. Okay. I don't know. I'm sorry for hurting anyone's heads listening to this example. It has to make sense, right? So it does count in its right place.
Yeah, and to the right extent. Like if you're just searching the MLS, looking at properties, putting together little spreadsheets, you haven't bought any of those properties, I would not include that time at all. I wouldn't even try. But if you've already got a portfolio established somewhere, you spend a little time looking for a new property, you close on that property, and we're talking, you know, an hour or two of research, whatever it happens to be, that I don't see an issue with. I'd go ahead and count it. Just again, don't rely on that getting you over the hurdle.
Right.
You know, because if you're doing that all year long, track it to see where you end up at the end of the year. You know, if you're exactly 750 hours, you got a substantial, you know, 50 hours or researching properties, odds are that's not going to fly if you're audited. If you've got 1,000 hours with 50 hours of research, then you don't have to worry because you've already hit it. So tracking, it's good. You want to know, but don't rely on it to get you over the hump. And don't rely on spending a lot of time researching properties, especially before you own any, just so you can kind of front load those hours.
If someone's researching hours and doesn't end up buying the property, you're saying don't even count that to buffer.
Yeah. Yeah. So the way I look at it is, especially when you're starting out your first year buying rental properties, don't even start counting hours until you close on that first property.
Mm-hmm. Got it. And then once you close on that first property, I guess you could think back to the hours you spent looking into that property, or not even that.
I usually start it once you close, you've kind of got it underway. It's not to say none of those hours could ever count. It's just, I take a conservative approach, and the keys to folks, like, what is it going to impact the operations?
Right.
The time you spent at closing, that's probably fine. You needed that. That was required to get the property. But if you looked at 10 different properties and you spent an hour on all 10 and you bought one, those other nine did nothing. You don't want to include those hours. Could you include the hour you spent on the property you bought? You could probably do that, because not raise any eyebrows or cause issues with your time log. You know, it has to be reasonable.
Right.
And then the key is just with everything, does it impact the operations of the activity?
Right. So now, once you close on the property and you're spending time researching property managers or whatever, you're doing research into renovations, those, I would assume, count, even though it's research.
Yeah, that counts. In that case, what you're doing, you're looking for someone to perform the tasks that are going to impact the operations. The research that tends to get thrown out is just market studies. You're researching the market or properties that you didn't buy. When you're looking at having someone come in and perform a service on the property that you have, whether it's a repair or to manage it, basically you're filling a job role. Think of it as like that's your management responsibility. So I wouldn't even call that research. It's more management. That's going to count.
Got it. And I think it's reasons like this that make the rules so complex, because
yeah,
it's not such a big booklet, I would say, to go through all the rules and see it. But the fact that research sometimes counts on properties will always count on other parts of the business. So it's just very hard to give over the rules with the right emphasis on research hours will count if you buy the property. If it's not dominating your hours, then that's fine, but don't rely on it. Right?
Yeah.
It's just hard to give that over other than a one-on-one with a client.
Yeah, exactly. Because in a one-on-one, you can sit down and you can go over the specific hours. That's why, as a general rule for anyone that's just, you know, you're thinking I might qualify and you're not working with someone, a professional, to kind of guide you and tell you specifically, just assume research hours are not going to count. Your travel is not going to count. And then when you have everything together and you're working with someone and you need some advice on what might count, you can get down into the nitty gritty. But just like a good rule of thumb, assume they don't count. And then anything you could pull in that would count when you get into the details is a little like icing on the cake and a bonus to help get you
right. And what's scary is that, you know, I speak to accountants all the time. They have anyone that needs help qualifying with the real estate professional status. And someone says, oh, I had a doctor, you know, because doctors invest in real estate, and then eventually either their spouse gets it or they sort of phase out of their role and they go into real estate. So he said, originally I didn't want to give it to him, but he spends so much time at conferences, I think he probably gets it. And I'm like, and I got to be careful when I'm speaking to a CPA and to go ahead and tell him, I don't think you're right about that, you know? But yeah, it's scary that even CPAs are not necessarily dialed in on the rules.
Yeah, yeah, I see that quite often. I have people come to me that have been claiming real estate professional status. It's like, you both work full time. How?
But no, not those reps, you know? You can push-ups don't count.
Exactly.
Okay, fine. So traveling out, learning out, and again, all this stuff. No, now I think that, you know, this is why I'm doing the podcast, is to sort of give over these perspectives and give over the context so people do understand they could question their accountant if they hear something here. Obviously, you always have to have a CPA that you're working with that will guide you. But this is really to give you an understanding, a grasp of all the rules, and you could have that back and forth. You know, it's so important, no matter which professional you're using, to research and ask questions will help anyone. Anyone who has someone who's asking them smart questions will help improve your situation. So people have the attitude like, oh, I'll go to my CPA or I'll go to my doctor. He'll just help me. That's true. He will help you. But if you could educate yourself and ask on-point questions, calling an Aramaic, you know, a Gavra, someone who's like a person, you know, I don't know how else to say it, but it could go a long way to making you a lot of money. And then also with doctors, it could save your life. So always good to get educated. Always good to get educated.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And often those are the best clients to work with. You know, if they care and they're kind of, they're dialed in and they want to know, they come looking for that guidance because they'll trust you. But if they kind of, if they have a good idea of what you're talking about, sometimes it's easier to get the message across. Like if you say, just don't count on these hours and focus on the operations, they tend to be the ones that are going to listen and go focus on the operations and not try to find an excuse to get you to believe that their other hours should count. The folks that don't really know, they're usually looking at it and they see what the rules say and they're trying to back their situation into the rules rather than change their behavior to make it conform to the rules. If that makes sense.
No, yeah, 100%. They want the end result. They don't want to pay taxes.
Yeah.
It's almost like, I think confirmation bias, not confirmation bias.
Yeah, similar.
Similar, that basically what they're doing somehow fits into everything that is needed of them.
Yeah, yeah,
the emphasis is not to do it right. And if you don't want to check them off that they're good, they're going to find a CPA that's willing to take risks. I make fun of this all the time. They want a CPA that's willing to take risks.
Oh, yeah. My buddy's CPA. Listen, claim real estate professional status. And he has a full-time job. It's like, well, if he gets audited or when he gets audited, he's not going to be telling you that anymore.
The best is when IRS agents get audited for reps.
Yeah.
Oh, man. We have this like image of an IRS agent and it's so off.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. I never met any IRS agents. There are a couple of cases against IRS agents that got audited.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're the best.
They eat their own. They eat their own.
Yep.
They're ruthless.
Yeah. They will go after them.
Yeah. All right. So that's one thing, researching and traveling time and networking.
Yep.
Doesn't really count.
Yeah, your
for
networking
the most part.
Seminars, those aren't going to.
Those aren't going to count.
They aren't going to count for reps.
Got it. So now getting into a little bit more gray space. So now you mentioned accounting, right? So let's say real estate accounting, legal advice, or let's say like designing, you know, somebody has a design company and is designing.
Like an architect or more like interior design?
So let's say interior design, because an architect, I would imagine, does count.
An architect, if they're handling the construction, they would, but architecture is not in the real property trades or business.
So even though it's like part of development or construction?
Yeah, the architectural work itself would be more of a professional service, similar to an accountant or an engineer. So that's going to kind of fall into the like consulting type roles where.
So an engineer also.
No, well, if you're an engineer that works for a construction company and you have the 5% or more ownership, that work can count. But the engineering firm itself, it doesn't fall under the real property trades or business.
It can't like attach itself. So similar to an accountant and a lawyer who is helping the real estate function, still it's not integral.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So like my work, even though I have a focus in real estate and a lot of what I do is real estate related, even if all I did was tax and accounting work for real estate, it still wouldn't qualify. My time doesn't count as a real property trader business. I couldn't be a real estate professional.
Right. But if you own 5% of all those companies that you did accounting for, then it would count.
Well, if I was working for them, yeah. Like I have to be doing the work for the company that I own 5%. And so if I was like, let's say I was an owner employee for a real property trader business from a big construction company, but my role was there as an accountant, then my time could work. In fact, there's a court case with a situation like that for an attorney. He worked for, I forget what the business did. It was a real property trader business. He was doing legal services for that company, but had the right ownership percentage and his time count. And the court said, this is a real property trader business. The code and the regulations don't specify exactly what you do if you're working in a real property trader business, just that you work in a real property trader business.
Oh, super cool. So anyone in-house that's helping the business function.
Yeah. Again, they have to have that ownership
percentage. As long as they own 5%.
Like a normal W-2 employee, they could be doing all the actual work, like direct real estate work, and it's just not going to count for them.
It's disgusting.
Yeah.
What is this? If not, if this is real trade. This is a real trade.
Yep.
But you don't own it, so you lose. Oh well.
Yeah, I think it goes back to the way the IRS defines participation, and it's basically work done by an individual that owns an interest in the company, and then at some point they said there's got to be this at least 5% ownership.
Right. That does make sense. Because if you're not getting any income generated by the business, you're just getting paid for work. So then that makes sense that you're not actively participating in the business. You're a worker.
Yeah.
Right? That does make sense. I did not see it through that lens. Okay, very cool. You know, because the more clarity you could get, I mean, at least for me, you know, this is like sort of a research project for me so I could learn from the experts. You know, the better you understand the rules, the better you know how to take advantage of them. And when I say take advantage,
absolutely.
I don't mean like in a bad way. I mean in a good way.
Right. In a legal way. Like that's kind of like learning the rules are and how to use them. The rules they put in place in the mid-80s, like 86 or so, where they created the passive activity loss rules, because they indirectly and unintentionally penalized people in real estate businesses. You know, like, for example, by making rental real estate default passive, that means the guy that doesn't a construction company and decides to hang on to some rentals could never use those losses. But for example, someone like me that owns an accounting firm, say I have a firm in one state and one of the state, one's profitable, firm two's generating losses, I can net my losses against the profitable branch, where here the guy that builds home and sells them and keeps some to run out, he can't use his losses to offset, you know, his profits from the other business. You know, if he's materially participating in his rentals, he should be eligible for the same rules as anyone else. So then they added real estate professional status in like 94 to help remedy that, because it was, you know, unfairly impacting people that were a real estate professional. That was their line of work, was all real estate. So they should be able to use losses as long as they're materially participating to offset income from other real estate businesses that they're running that have profits, just like any other business owner.
I didn't realize I was born at such a horrible time for people in real estate. I was born in 1990. Thought, you know, the world seemed pretty okay. And anyone in real estate was like,
it was only for that short period, because before 86, there were no passive activity rules. So, you know, all the high income people were going out buying rental properties, front loading their depreciation, taking their high W-2 income down to nothing and not paying any taxes. So then typical Congress, they overreact and just like make the rules too stringent, and then realize, okay, now we're hurting these people. Let's dial it back. And now maybe that's where we are.
For some reason, investing in real estate and taking advantage of the passive losses is easier than other businesses. And that's why they put the rule on to begin with, because you had everyone just taking advantage. But then at the same time, we don't want to mess over the real people. So we go ahead and make sort of rules, and we're not perfect beings. So you got to make rules that hopefully fits the best. So now all the legit people are fine. And plus, what it does is it does allow people to sort of hang on to certain rules and get entry. My brother's inside, let me in. You know, I would say like a broker, really, the rules were not really meant for them. Like someone who's just brokering houses and not really owning a real estate business. And it's just an independent contractor, and that's why they own 5% of the business, shouldn't really get included. But
yeah, that broker, so the IRS has a rule, at one point did try to push back on that. And there's a case in California, I think it's like Garwal, where they went to the dictionary and looked up the term broker, and it's basically said bringing together a buyer and a seller. That was one of the definitions. And the court found that, you know, real estate agent does exactly that. So their services qualify under the brokerage definition of real property trades or businesses. So real estate agents qualify under brokerage, but like a mortgage broker, they're not allowed.
Right. I think they get counted like accountants. They are letting real estate take place, but at the same time, it's not actually real estate. It's allowing real estate to happen. Just like without legal documents, you can't have a sale. So too, without money, you can't have a sale.
Yeah, it still doesn't count. Exactly.
Okay, so mortgage brokering doesn't count. I actually just had this conversation. It's a heartbreaking conversation. I hate when people get on the phone with me and they want to learn more about the real estate professional status, and they work with a lending company, and they're a mortgage broker, and they're like all pumped up, like for 2 months, they're doing research. And I'm like, sorry. I mean, it's two reasons, really. It's, you know, they're a mortgage broker and they're also working for somebody else.
Exactly.
But a real estate broker just happens to be, you know, it happens to be normal for real estate brokers to be independent contractors. Just to review what we went through. So, you know, there's the traveling, there's the research, counts and context and perspective a little bit. When it makes sense, you have to know. And obviously, if you heard this, you know exactly when it counts, when you should count it, when you shouldn't count it. You don't want to count a ton of hours that just are not going to be anything. So you don't want to just like say, oh, 800 hours of research and like 200 hours counted, right? So you want to try to be as, you know, as accurate. You want your timesheet, you want to buffer with a little bit questionable stuff, but you don't want it to be a nice chunk.
And it's
nice
fine to track your time on, you know, here's what I'm doing in my rental properties. And you know, some of it may not count for purposes of passing the IRS test, but you've got your log of time. And then you just make sure you've got enough in there of those items that directly impact operations, because that's what it's going to take to actually pass the test. So if you're, you know, if you're playing around on the MLS for 10 hours looking for properties that you never buy, there's like, there's not a chance that's ever going to impact your operations or your real estate portfolios.
Right. And sending emails.
Yeah, emails count.
Will be the. But what kind of email? I've heard that she should, you know, every 5 minutes send an email, or she should be looped in on emails. So things like that. Okay, the looped in on emails, you know yourself that you're just trying to fake it.
In fact,
right?
In the regulations, it state that any time spent just to hit the time requirements to qualify is disallowed.
It's just the way they word things.
It's so, you know, of the seven tests, I think number seven is like within like some of the language under that, they say like any time spent just to hit the time requirements, meaning time that that time's generally not going to have much of an impact on your operations, if any, and you're really just doing stuff. They phrase it is like time spent on activities that an owner typically wouldn't do, which sending out random emails for no purpose at all is something. You're running a business that you're trying to make money and you're probably not going to spend time doing that. So that time they could throw out anyway. Again, they're going to look at how credible your time is overall. The more credible your overall time in activities appears and what you're doing is generally having a direct impact on the business or the rental property itself, the more likely it is that they're not going to pay a whole lot of attention to little one-offs. Or if you've got some research hours in there, you know, travel to this property for X reason, because ideally, if you're really running it like a business, you're going to have plenty of time and the work you're doing is to improve the property or, you know, impact the operations.
I mean, I feel like the principle you're emphasizing right here is to just really just do it, just really be legit with your approach. And then, you know, you have to learn the rules and know exactly what to do, but you should be fine if you're actually doing it. But to try to take advantage of the rules, it's going to easily be able to be disproven if you're just emailing and they're not legitimate. Yeah. You're going
to
get busted.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it. Or if you get audited, it's going to be easy to tell.
Right. So back to material participation test number 7, I think a goal I'm going to make for myself is to find someone who qualifies for number 7. Just so everyone knows what rule number 7 is, there's 7 rules. Some of them are very specific, some of them are not. Rule number 7 is if you don't qualify for any of the 6, but
facts
given
and circumstances,
facts and circumstances, we decide that it was, how in the world do you miss the 500 hours, 100 hours more than anyone else? What, you do 150 hours and someone does more than you? I thought I have a big imagination. I guess not. I just don't know how that could be possible. And who would rely on it? Who knows which agent they're sending
to you? That's going to be the hardest one to prove, because you're basically going to have to convince the IRS agent that's working on your case why you qualify according to the facts and circumstances. And you're just kind of pushing your luck there. But again, I've never had a situation where that was what we relied on and had it work out. So it was, we always rely on one of the other tests.
It's black and white. Yeah. Have any of your clients ever been audited? Are you allowed to speak about that?
I couldn't give specifics, but yeah, I've handled a few audits.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh yeah? Okay, cool. Any specific things that you learned through an audit that you went with your client that someone who's getting into this should know?
Yeah, they will ask for your hours and they will ask for you to substantiate them. So that having that log is key. Like that's where they're going to start. If they're auditing real estate professional status, they're going to ask you for your hours for your real estate work and then material participation hours. Often it's going to start with a general interview and them asking you about time spent, not just in real estate, but everything else. If you got your 750 hours and you think you qualify greater than 50% of your time, but you're doing anything else, not only should you be tracking time in your real property trade and business, but whatever else, if you have a part-time W-2 job that maybe only work a few hundred hours, you better have something kind of showing to prove that I worked 300 hours here, but 800 hours in my real estate business. You need to have something to prove it.
Proof is not on them. So the onus is not on them.
Correct.
To prove that
exactly.
For your other businesses, you have to bring everything. They'll say, no, you have a W-2 job, so you lose.
Yep.
Right. And your job is to convince the IRS so they don't go to tax court, right? That's like what we're trying to do at this point. And they'll ask you for proof to substantiate your time log as legit, or let's say even without proof.
If you don't have a log, it's still possible to prove you qualify based on, like, you can use calendar appointments. You can sit down and kind of in narrative form explain to the IRS. And if you come across as credible, like let's say you do own a construction company, in all of your work, that is your only primary source of work, is your construction company. If you're working full time, it's going to be pretty easy to prove if you're actually working 2,000 hours a year, even if you don't have a time log. You can have testimony from witnesses. Like if your employees say, yeah, he's here every day for 8 hours a day, that's all going to weigh in your favor. You don't need to keep a time log. If you're just getting to the 750 or slightly over, or if you have a second job, that's when having that time log is going to be, it's not required under the law, but it's going to be required to prove to the IRS so you don't have to go fight it in court. So that's kind of the distinction there. If you're working full time in one of those 11 real property trades or businesses, and you're actually working all year long and not doing anything else other than maybe managing some rental properties that you own, the detailed time logs probably not necessary, though it can never hurt. So,
okay. So time log is good. Proof is good. You just want to make the best case for yourself as possible. Do it in a way that will put you out on top. You don't want to build up a case that you know would win against the IRS in court. You want to build up a case that the IRS won't want to go to court.
You want to make it so they don't want to go to court. And most IRS agents they're not there to like ruin your day. They're just doing a job. So
what?
If you're honest and you've got the legitimate work, convincing them shouldn't be a very difficult job. Just make sure you've got your records. Documentation's key. And go in, be honest and relax and just go with it. Their job is, they're here to audit, to make sure you're telling the truth. They're not trying to overturn someone that's following right. the rules. They're trying to find people that are gaming the system and not actually following the rules.
Got it.
All right.
So we're out of time. Thank you so much,
yeah,
Ryan.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
I enjoyed it.
I had a blast and I just got a deeper understanding of different parts. And I hope anyone
awesome.
Listening
Thank
to
you.
It yeah. did as well. Yeah. So how could someone reach out to you if
you
want
to
follow
my
up?
Website says thepulisgroup.com/contact. We have an intake form, our email out there is contact@thepulisgroup.com. So we are taking on new clients. Feel free to hit us up. Be happy to talk to you.
All right. Awesome. So again, thank you, Ryan. And
All right,
we'll be in
awesome.
Touch.
Thank you.